Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. The following is an article from the January-February 2026 edition of National Geographic History Magazine. The title of today's article is Prohibition. Americans knew their booze was poisoned and drank it anyway. The author of today's article is Isabel Ravenna. My name is Jim Briscoe, and this is brought to you by Airs LA. During Prohibition, the U.S. government added toxins to industrial alcohol, knowing it could kill. The result? A chemical war that targeted the poor and reshaped public trust. When jazz musician Bix Beiderbecke poured himself a drink in Cleveland, Ohio in 1928, he didn't know his luck had just run as dry as the nation's taps. He collapsed while performing, and in the coming years, his health rapidly declined. Although he was a known alcoholic, Beiderbecke's death from pneumonia at age 28 was still shocking. Some speculate it wasn't just an infection that killed one of the greatest cornetists of the 20s. He'd been poisoned. The likely culprit? A government policy that made drinking alcohol not just illegal, but lethal. During Prohibition, the so-called noble experiment, not all alcohol was banned, just that which was drinkable, non-medicinal, and non-religious. To prevent bootleggers from using industrial alcohol, the United States government denatured it by adding toxic chemicals like methanol and benzene to render it undrinkable and gave manufacturers tax exemptions if enough toxic additives were included. The public knew. A New York Times headline at the time read, "Government to double alcohol poison content." By the end of Prohibition in 1933, more than 10,000 Americans had died from imbibing tainted booze. Bootleggers, easy to meet demand for liquor, stole, redistilled, and diluted industrial alcohol to counteract the toxic additives. Thousands of people died in what researchers have called the Chemist's War of Prohibition. "It was more out of ignorance than actually trying to kill people who drink," says Zach Jensen, a content editor at the Mob Museum in Las Vegas. "I blame the bootleggers. They deliberately passed off poisonous alcohol as legitimate, but I don't think the government is completely inculpable." That culpability didn't go unnoticed. For instance, Charles Norris, New York City's first chief medical examiner, was a leading voice against alcohol's denaturation, calling it "our noble experiment in extermination." Generally, politicians don't like to kill people that elect them, says Peter Leibhold, a Smithsonian curator emeritus. "Even criminal organizations don't like killing their customers because they're in the business of selling stuff." But on Christmas Eve, 1926, 60 people wound up in New York's Bellevue Hospital from drinking tainted liquor. 8 didn't live past Christmas, and in the following days, the death toll climbed to 23, with dozens more blinded. Horrified, Norris swiftly gathered the press. "The government knows it is not stopping drinking by putting poison in alcohol, yet it continues its poisoning process, heedless of the fact that people determined to drink are daily absorbing that poison," he told reporters. Knowing this to be true, the United States government must be charged with the moral responsibility for the deaths that poisoned liquor causes, although it cannot be held legally responsible. But not everyone saw the government as the villain. Wayne Wheeler, counsel and key leader of the Anti-Saloon League, argued that blame didn't lie with the law, but with drinkers themselves. The person who drinks this industrial alcohol is a deliberate suicide, Wheeler said in a 1926 statement. The very fact that men will gamble with their lives to get a drink of liquor shows how deeply this habit was fixed. To root out a bad habit like that cost many lives and long years of effort. That statement outraged some lawmakers. New Jersey Senator Edward Irving Edwards called it legalized murder and declared the government an accessory to the crime. However, according to Liebhold, while the government denatured alcohol to prevent consumption, it was criminals who made it available, often in dangerously impure conditions. So, was it murder? Maybe not. But the government's attitude was that if you're willing to drink, you'll suffer the consequences, which weren't equally felt. Wealthier Americans could obtain government-approved medical whiskey or sip cocktails overseas on booze cruises. Working-class communities and people of color lacked such options and were often the ones drinking what was available and dying from it. One popular liquor alternative was Jake, slang for the patent medicine Jamaica Ginger, which contained up to 95% alcohol. But the government mandated that non-prescription bottles of it contain a high content of bitter ginger oleoresin to deter people from drinking it. To avoid detection and make the drink more palatable, manufacturers instead added triorthocresyl phosphate, or TOCP, an industrial plasticizer that mimicked the look of ginger oleoresin. This slow-acting neurotoxin attacked the nervous system, causing paralysis or a distinctive limp that became known as Jake leg. About 35,000 Americans joined the United Victims of Ginger Paralysis Association, and though the exact number is unknown, estimates range from 50,000 to 100,000 affected. Blues man Ishpeming Bracey memorialized the condition in his song, Jake Liquor Blues, singing, "It's the doggonest disease ever heard of since I've been born. You get numb in front of your body, you can't carry any leaven on." While framed as a moral crusade, prohibition was also political. 7 years before its enactment, the 16th Amendment created a federal income tax, enabling the loss of government revenue from drinking alcohol. Denaturing industrial alcohol made it unfit for consumption and therefore untaxable. After a period of time, they knew they were killing people, and they didn't stop, says Deborah Blum, a Pulitzer Prize-winning science journalist, author and expert on the history of poison in America. "I don't think they were intentionally trying to kill people, but they were. So I think that's the acceptance of collateral damage, like in any war." Harvard history professor Lisa McGeer argues in her book, The War on Alcohol, that this was really the rise of the penal state. It saw the growth of wiretapping, a surge of incarceration, and increased federal policing, practices that would later expand during the war on drugs and beyond. It's the people who pay when governments give themselves the mantle of moral authority and high ground that justifies, "Whatever I do is justified because I'm doing it for your good," Blum says, "and I decide what your good is." If you want to learn more about AIRS LA and the types of programs we offer, follow us by clicking on any of the social media links at the top of our webpages. If you like what you see or hear, please click the like button. That brings us to the end of today's article, Prohibition. Americans knew their booze was poisoned and drank it anyway. My name is Jim Briscoe. Thank you for listening.